All rise. The Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning. Our first case is 13-1044, State of Ohio versus Jason Bodie. For the appellant, Mr. Wood.
He's got something for you. Thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor. May it please the court, my name is Scott Wood, and along with my associate Alyssa Parrott, we represent the appellant, Jason Bodie. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Back in 2011, in a span of 7 months, Jason Bodie was charged with two separate OVI offenses on two separate occasions. Both of those OVIs, for sentencing purposes, were first offenses within 6 years. However, the state looked back 20 years and found five prior convictions: 1998, 1998, 1997, 1996, and for purposes of this appeal, a juvenile adjudication in Franklin County 19 years earlier in 1992. As a result, Bodie was indicted with felony OVIs with mandatory prison specifications. At the trial court level, Bodie collaterally attacked that juvenile adjudication in 1992, claiming it was an uncounseled conviction that could not be used to enhance the OVIs to felonies or to support the mandatory prison specifications.
Was it an adjudication of delinquency, or was it a conviction for DUI?
It was an adjudication as a juvenile traffic offender.
And how does that
comport? That's more akin to a delinquency.
How does that comport with a DUI conviction?
It would be the equivalent of an OVI conviction, Your Honor.
If it were counseled, would you not be here?
If it were counseled, or if there was a proper waiver of counsel, I would not be here.
All right, thank you.
And Mr. Wood, if the juvenile adjudication were not considered, this would not be a mandatory prison term, is that correct?
That's correct. Both of these OVIs would be first offenses within 6 years, both first degree misdemeanors, both would carry up to 6 months in jail.
And instead your client received how much time?
He was sentenced to 7.5 years in prison. 3 years of that time is mandatory prison time. Now, at the oral hearing, Bodie met his burden and established that the juvenile adjudication was without counsel and without a proper waiver of counsel. The trial court found that. However, the trial court also found that since there was no actual confinement or imprisonment as a result of that juvenile adjudication, it could still be used to enhance those two OVIs. So the issue is whether or not Bodie's juvenile disposition constituted confinement, or in the language of the U.S. Supreme Court, actual imprisonment.
Well, since it was neither confinement nor actual, he was just exposed or potentially had he violated, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. However, the U.S. Supreme Court in 2002 clarified the term actual imprisonment to actually include a suspended sentence. What the U.S. Supreme Court said in 2002 in Alabama versus Shelton is that if a sentence that may end up in an actual deprivation of a person's liberty, like a suspended sentence, is in fact actual imprisonment.
Did he have any time hanging over his head, such as a suspended sentence does?
He did not. And I think that is the difference between a juvenile adjudication and in the adult context.
So when he left juvenile court, he had been, the consequences of the adjudication had been meted out, and he had to do what? His license was suspended for a year, was that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And obviously no further infractions or delinquencies. What else?
Well, Your Honor, it was difficult to determine the exact disposition because there was no journal entry, there was no pleadings, there was no recording. Basically, the state called the court reporter to testify. She had kept index cards as to what happened in these juvenile cases. Those were on microfiche, so she interpreted the index cards for the court. And what the court determined is that the disposition included that he be ordered to attend a driver intervention program, a three-day driver intervention program, which is typical in first offense OVIs.
Was that a residential program or a day program?
It was a residential program conducted at Mary Haven. It was an overnight program.
And that's what you say is the equivalent then to confinement?
Not necessarily. If it was just the confinement in the driver intervention program, I don't think that was actual imprisonment. However, the juvenile court did retain jurisdiction over the case. After the disposition, there were a number of hearings after that. There was one hearing where Mr. Bodie appeared. It was determined that he had successfully completed the driver intervention program, but there was a recommendation for aftercare. So the juvenile court ordered that he complete that aftercare and come back for another hearing where, quite frankly, the charge could have been reduced to a reckless operation. Mr. Bodie failed to appear for that final hearing. The case was closed, and the juvenile court relinquished jurisdiction at that time.
So he never was facing confinement, because when he failed to conform with the dictates of the juvenile court with regards to his behavior, there was no consequence for his failure to do that.
Well, he did complete the three-day program.
Yeah, but we're not talking about the three-day program as being the equivalent to a confinement according to the United States Supreme Court case. So, yes, if the potential was a confinement to DYS up until the age of 21, which is typical of a sentence, you know, for a juvenile, but that was never a potential here. He was not exposed to confinement that would meet the definition, was he?
He was.
How?
He wasn't exposed in a suspended sentence context like an adult. However, RC Section 2152.21, which in 1992 was RC Section 2151.356, that is the dispositional statute for juvenile traffic offenders. That is the statute that permitted the juvenile court to order a three-day program for an OVI. That statute says that if the juvenile does not complete that three-day program, the juvenile court has the authority to send that juvenile to detention. So that is the suspended sentence aspect of this. Had he not completed that three-day driver intervention program, he could have been sent to juvenile detention.
Juvenile detention on the county level?
County level, that's correct.
And that would suffice?
That would be a lockdown facility, juvenile detention, yes. So that is the crux of the appellant's position, and that is what we believe satisfies the definition set forth by the U.S. Supreme Court in Alabama versus Shelton, that because the initial juvenile disposition to attend the three-day driver intervention program may have ended up in the actual deprivation of his liberty, and that is juvenile detention, then that was actual imprisonment as that definition was defined in Alabama versus Shelton.
Counsel, so you are not saying that the court's retaining of jurisdiction and then the potential for confinement is the reason that we should reverse. You're saying that it's linked specifically to 2152.21?
It is. However, I think the continuing jurisdiction is important because had the juvenile court not retained jurisdiction over the juvenile, then the juvenile court could not have imposed juvenile detention if, in fact, he failed to complete the three-day program.
But that would be a very broad view of what potential for incarceration is. And couldn't that lead to other consequences here if we were to just look at it that way without linking it to the specific statute?
Well, I think the statute is important in combination with the juvenile court retaining jurisdiction. That's why I think it's analogous to a suspended sentence in the adult context. For example, in the adult context, if the court imposes a three-day program, and the adult, and then 30 days in jail, 30 days suspended, complete the three-day program. If the adult does not complete that program, the trial court can impose 3 days in jail or up to 30 days.
But the trial court has acted to say that at the time.
That's
and
correct.
And as the chief points out, you're talking about the potential of a specific prison term or a specific confinement term. Here, we don't have the judge saying that.
No, but we have the statute saying that. The statute gives the juvenile court the authority. The juvenile court doesn't impose a suspended sentence in the typical adult context. The juvenile court orders certain dispositional orders, retains jurisdiction, and if those orders aren't complete, there are consequences, similar to an adult suspended sentence. So the suspended nature of the detention is within the statute itself.
Counsel, I think where you're confusing me possibly is in your brief. Do you want this court in this case to find that the three-day Holiday Inn Express is confinement?
No.
That's where your brief is. Did he do it in this case? Not the crime, the Holiday Inn.
He did.
So why isn't that confinement?
Because at the time that the juvenile court imposed that disposition to attend that program, there was a possibility that his personal liberty may be deprived at a later date had he not completed that program.
That's what's confusing me. Aren't you asking us to go off on a hypothetical adventure at that point? He did do the 3 days.
Right, but what the U.S. Supreme Court said in U.S. versus Shelton is not whether or not there was deprivation at the time of sentencing. Is there a possibility of a deprivation of liberty? And this is the exact issue that three of our appellate districts have already discussed, the 5th, the 8th, and the 9th, but they were all in the adult context, and those were all situations where the three-day program was imposed.
That's what I'm saying. You're confusing me by doing alternative. You almost sound like a doctor with a differential diagnosis here. In this case, he did the 3 days.
He did.
Do you want this court to find that that is confinement? Because we've never done that, have we?
This court has not done that.
Do you want us to do that today?
What I want this court to do is if there is a sentence that involves a three-day program, and at the time of the sentencing or the disposition, there is a possibility that that person's liberty may be deprived in the future, then that person was entitled to counsel at the time of that sentencing or disposition. Because at the time of the sentencing or disposition, we don't know whether or not that person is going to do the three-day program.
So your argument is more towards the right to counsel rather than the actual confinement. There was confinement here.
There was confinement.
Potential for confinement triggers the need for an attorney, correct?
That's correct.
Right. So the question is, if there was no potential, in other words, if he only had the three-day program, you know, Mr. Bodie, you've got to do 3 days in Maryhaven and it's for this residential program, and then the court did not retain jurisdiction. Justice O'Neill's question is that confinement?
It is not.
Okay, why not?
Because if the juvenile court did not retain jurisdiction, there would be no possibility of the deprivation of his liberty in the future.
You don't think the 3 days in Maryhaven was a deprivation of his liberty?
I do not believe it meets the definition of actual imprisonment as set forth by the U.S. Supreme Court. I personally believe it was a deprivation of his liberty. I personally believe it was confinement. But with regard to the legal definition of actual imprisonment, I believe that you need the possibility of a deprivation of his liberty at some point in time in the future.
Counsel, I don't want to belabor, but you're confusing me. You're confusing me. Are you saying, therefore, that a juvenile who's told, walk out of this courtroom, walk next door, turn yourself into the Holiday Inn, get locked up for 3 days, and by the way, you don't have the right to have counsel at that event? I don't understand that. He's going away for 3 days forget where he's going, he's lost his liberty for 3 days. Doesn't that, as a matter of law, trigger the right to counsel? Right there, standing all by itself.
According to the U.S. Supreme Court authority, I think the answer to that, Your Honor, is no.
I would disagree with you.
Where do you find the authority for the actual confinement in this case?
RC Section 2152.21, which in 1992 was 2151.356, specifically, I believe it's Section A7, which indicates A7 under the former statute, A6 under the current statute, which indicates that if a juvenile fails to complete the dispositional order, the juvenile court has the authority to send that juvenile to a detention facility.
And that is not with respect to felonies only. It also incorporates the traffic offenses in your
That's view. Correct. That is the juvenile traffic offender disposition. And what that A6 section does is allows the juvenile court to use the dispositional alternatives from a delinquency allegation.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
I'll reserve the balance of my time. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Lancaster? Or excuse me, Mr. Marks from Lancaster.
Ms. Chief Justice, may it please the court. My name is Greg Marks. I'm the Fairfield County Prosecutor, and I do reside in Lancaster, Ohio.
All right.
I represent the appellee. I'd like to respond to several of the court's questions. First of all, the trial court specifically found that appellant was not confined at the Mary Haven program. That's paragraph 3 of his findings of fact. He also concluded in his conclusion of law. Those findings were not an abuse of discretion. The Fifth District Court of Appeals affirmed those findings.
Counsel, let's explore that on an ideological basis this morning.
Okay.
Do you believe that if you walked out of our front door this morning and I told you to go to the DoubleTree across the street and stay there for 3 days, have you been confined? It's a court order, isn't it?
It is a court order. If I'm in my street clothes and I have things around me to, so I can watch TV.
They have nice TVs.
I'm in my civvies.
Do you have
no,
a right,
I do not believe that is confined.
Do you have a right to say, Justice O'Neill, before you do that, I'd really like to have a lawyer at my side to tell me if this is okay. Don't you think you have a right to counsel anytime a court says, go somewhere and stay there?
What the courts of this land have said is that
This court?
This court in Brooks and Brandon and the United States Supreme Court have said you cannot confine someone if he doesn't have counsel. Fact of the matter is, none of us have complete freedom. Most of the people in this courtroom had to go turn in our address and put our things on the belt. If any of you have ever flown, you don't have complete freedom. You have to do what you have to do to fly. In this particular
Counsel, let's not go too far foot there.
Okay.
I don't have to get in that line at the airport. Nobody's telling me to get in that line.
That's right. And this particular juvenile didn't have to want to keep driving. He chose to come because he wanted to keep driving.
So your position today is if the court told him to go somewhere for 3 days under a court order, he is not entitled to counsel?
If the trial court finds that he's not been confined.
And this court has never ruled on that issue, have we, if the three-day event is confinement?
Not on that specific issue.
Thank you. Thank you.
The key issue in the cases that all the parties have filed in their briefs is, were they actually confined? And in this particular case, the state differs with the idea that this appellant was given a suspended sentence. It's in our brief that he did not complete the program properly. However, there was no real consequence other than he lost his license faster. being able to go to Marysville tonight and watch a basketball game or watch a movie is not confinement. That's a different situation.
Mr. Marks, how do you read Alabama versus Shelton?
I read Alabama versus Shelton saying that a suspended sentence is considered enough that they have the right to counsel. But in this case, my argument is this appellant did not receive a suspended sentence. That's the distinguishment. That's what distinguishes this case from the three
Court of Appeals. Continuing jurisdiction of the juvenile court with the potential of confinement at the detention center was not confinement.
That's what the trial court judge found. And in this particular case,
the trial court judge for this DUI, this, you know, the most recent trial court judge in Mr. Bodie's life, correct?
Correct. Found that the 1992 sentence was not confinement, nor was it even a suspended sentence.
Well, counsel, the juvenile court's range of things that they can do, whether it's an unruly or delinquent case or a traffic case, is different from adult court. Was then and is now, is it not? Suspended sentences really aren't what juvenile court does. They make a finding. You're delinquent, you're unruly, you're a traffic offender. And then they order something to be done. But they retain jurisdiction, don't they?
And even though they retain jurisdiction, that doesn't mean they're going to confine somebody.
But in adult court, you don't retain jurisdiction unless you say you do. It's not automatic.
I'll agree with that, certainly.
And so there is a real discrete differentiation in terms of what can happen to one after you leave the courtroom in juvenile court and after you leave the courtroom in adult court. The only things that can happen to you after you leave the courtroom in adult court are the things the judge specifically says at the time can happen to you. Correct?
Correct. I agree with that. But in this particular case, the juvenile judge could have sentenced young Mr. Bodie to 30 days in the Ohio Youth Commission, suspended on treatment at Mary Haven. Then Alabama.
But he didn't do that.
I know he did not do that. So that the whole point is, appellant is saying, let's trigger the right to counsel based on the possible sentences that any judge in our 88 counties could do. And what the appellee is saying is, let's look at the actual decision from the trial court.
He could have sent him to the Youth Commission on a traffic offense?
Presumably. I wasn't doing a great deal of juvenile law in 1992, but presumably.
Are you sure of that?
No, I'm not certain of that. But I think there could have been
I wouldn't represent that to us if you're not sure of that.
And there's also not a necessity for the continuing jurisdiction in a juvenile matter. Not all juvenile matters are, does the court retain jurisdiction on?
Correct.
I mean, some are just like an adult court. You come in, you know, a traffic ticket, for example. It's not a continuing, you know, you're 16-year-old and you get a traffic ticket for speeding. The court doesn't retain jurisdiction on that, that minor until the age of 21.
Not usually, certainly. We're asking that you look at what actually happened in this case, and also, was the trial court's decision unreasonable, arbitrary, or capricious?
Counsel, haven't we really been backed into a corner then? Won't this court, in order to affirm this trial court, have to find, in this case, that was confinement? If you want us to ignore the hypotheticals, let's go to the facts. He was in timeout for 3 days, correct?
I don't know that the record is so clear, but the trial court found that he was not. The trial court.
You're talking about the adult trial court. I'm talking correct. About the juvenile trial court.
And that record is not all that clear just because of the passage of time.
You mean we don't know if he did the 3 days?
I don't believe the trial court record makes that crystal clear, no.
But he was not confined to any other institution other than the 3 days at Mary Haven.
Correct.
So you have a situation where there's no other sentence that is imposed and then held in abeyance. You have 3 days in Mary Haven, and by apparently your agreement and your counsel, opposing counsel, that does not constitute confinement according to the United States Supreme Court's definitions and other cases. So then you look, and your argument shifts then. The opposing counsel says because he was subject to confinement because of the retained jurisdiction, that he was entitled to an attorney, and you part company there, and your position is that the 3 days is not confinement, and we don't know what happened with the rest of that sentence. Is that where you are?
Yes, that is our position. You said it more eloquently than I, but that's exactly our position.
What could the trial court have done, in your view, if it chose to impose some further punishment?
In 1992?
Yes.
I fear the record is not clear enough for me to...
What does the statute permit or authorize in your view?
I believe the trial court in a juvenile setting has as many options as there is creativity. But the question for this panel is what could have been done? It's no different than...
Well, if I understand Mr. Wood's argument, it is that, as a follow-up to what the chief has indicated, the trial court could have incarcerated Mr. Bodie.
I don't believe the record states that.
I'm asking, what is your view of the statute?
The statute...
He claims that revised code 2151.356A7 authorizes the trial court to impose a period of commitment or incarceration.
And it may well do that, but that's no different than if tomorrow somebody goes in the Parma Municipal Court and doesn't have counsel, doesn't waive counsel, and the judge fines him $50 and doesn't give him a suspended sentence, and he pleads guilty, that is not confinement, nor is what happened to Mr. Bodie confinement. The issue under all the cases from this court and the United States Supreme Court isn't what is possible, but what actually happened.
Mr. Wood, as a matter of semantics, could we take a look at the words in custody, confinement, incarceration, because the terms sometimes get mixed up. What did the U.S. Supreme Court specifically say regarding state-appointed counsel?
State-appointed counsel is necessary if there is confinement, and in the Alabama versus Shelton case, or even a suspended sentence.
So the word was confinement, which is similar to custody. It isn't incarceration.
Well, they may have used all three terms.
Well, because it's very important to think about, you can be confined, and I think Justice O'Neill is talking about confinement to something other than prison, which is not imprisonment. And custody is a broader term, and so we're using these three terms interchangeably, and if we're talking about the state has the obligation to provide an attorney anytime one of these sentences can be passed, we ought to know what are the types of sentences that we're talking about.
And in thinking back over the cases, the United States Supreme Court did use the terms incarceration, is the term that I believe
which
was
is
used.
A narrower term, talking about prison, which is a state institution.
Or county jail even, but right. Incarceration is certainly, as a felony prosecutor, that's what I'm always hoping for.
Counsel, you've got my imagination going again. I'm glad you're here this morning.
Thank you.
So your kid in Parma that got the good deal of $50 fine, right? He could have gone to the youth commission, could he not, at the beginning of that hearing? When he goes to court and say, you're charged with this, how do you plead there, young man? He says, well, you look like a nice judge. I think I'll say that I'm guilty, or true. I think I'll say true. And he said, well, I think you're a nice kid. Here's your $50 fine. But the reality is, if they were there on a rainy Tuesday and the judge wasn't happy, he could have ended up in incarceration, could he not? And is that the time he would then trigger his right to counsel when it went south?
Yes.
Oh, you mean after he finds out he's going to the youth commission, now he says, judge, I've really rethought this. I don't like you and I want a lawyer.
And that's what habeas corpus is for.
Oh, that would be the solution, habeas.
Or a direct commission. Appeal. A direct appeal would be a certainly much quicker solution.
So you're saying that the right to counsel only gets triggered after the sentence is imposed?
No, what I'm saying is it's only violated so that this court needs to be involved if a sentence has been imposed.
Well, don't you think that we ought to be looking at it from the front end as opposed to the back end?
That would be helpful, but in terms of trying to correct something that happened in 1992, that's rather difficult.
Well, I don't think that we're here specifically trying to address Mr. Bodie's problems. If this were the case, I don't think we would have taken it in if it was only up to Mr. Bodie or his issues. I mean, this is the bigger picture, and it's will apply to other juveniles who may find themselves similarly situated. So that's what we're here talking about today. So that's why I'd prefer not to have to rely on habeas as the band-aid that we're going to employ to fix this problem. We'd like to fix it up front if there is in fact a problem. And apparently there's a disagreement between what the options to be meted out in juvenile court will trigger when it comes to the necessity for counsel. Would you, let's fast forward, and here we are in 2014, and Mr. Bodie shows up in juvenile court under the same circumstances. He's DUI, and he is waiting to see what the trial court will do, the juvenile trial court. Is he entitled to counsel?
Certainly.
He is now, today. He is entitled to counsel.
Yes.
Why is that?
Well, if it were criminal, it's Criminal Rule 44, but there's a separate juvenile rule and a juvenile statute that give him the right to counsel.
All right. So we all agree that Mr. Bodie would be entitled to counsel before he faced the judge today.
Absolutely. And part of the problem, Your Honor.
Wait a minute.
I'm sorry. I'll shut up.
Was he similarly situated back in 1992, entitled to counsel?
Yes. And where the problem is that we're not examining is the real problem is the trial judge that goes too fast and doesn't adequately put a waiver on the record. That's the real problem.
Okay, but we don't even have an indication, and the record is so sparse here, we're not even going to delve into what was on the record, what wasn't on the record, because we don't have that to speculate about.
I disagree. Actually, we could have, the court reporter who did the 1992 hearing actually testified. Judge Barron's ruled against us on that issue, but you have a greater record than you will usually. There's a case virtually every day in our court where somebody is quibbling about whether they waive their right to counsel. That's the real problem. Try and get the records from 2007 in the Franklin County Municipal Court. It's, or any county municipal court. That's the real problem why we're asking you to just look at the specific facts in this particular case. Don't look at every single what might have happened. The real practical problem is every courtroom in this state is too busy. The judges move too fast. They don't always do the waivers on the record as well as they should. But certainly this juvenile was entitled to counsel. Certainly any adult in Parma Municipal Court is entitled to counsel. And the practical problem is what do our trial court judges and our Court of Appeals judges and our Supreme Court judges do
counsel,
when the records
I'm
are
inadequate?
Counsel,
I'm afraid you talked too long then. You're conceding he was entitled to counsel in 92?
Certainly.
And he did not have counsel?
But he was not confined. So it is still a valid conviction for enhancement purposes. That's the issue. Thank you very much.
Also, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
I'd like to take this short period of time just to address Justice Lanzinger's issue regarding terminology. I think that is important. If you look at the U.S. Supreme Court line of cases, starting with Scott versus Illinois in 79, going through Nichols, going through Shelton, they use the term actual imprisonment. That's the term they use. Now, this court in State versus Brooke in 2007 did use the term confinement. I don't know if that was purposeful or perhaps just
stop there.
Some other terminology.
Well, and we have the ability to be more
precise.
We can give more rights than the federal.
Absolutely. And if it is confinement, then I think Justice O'Neill is absolutely correct. A three-day program is confinement. If we're talking about actual imprisonment as defined by the U.S. Supreme Court, you need to have that suspended or possibility of deprivation at the time of sentencing, which I think we have here as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
All right, we'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.